Yeah, hi Jocelyn, it's really nice to see you again. And thanks for joining us today. And I know you're going to be talking about the President's report, aren't you, from the CEDAW People's Tribunal?
That's right, Ian, and lovely to see you this morning. And yes, it's about the report, CEDAW in Law, People's Tribunal, the judge's report from the hearings of the 13th of July 2022 on the issue of the Pensions Act of 1995 in particular, and the change of the age for women for getting the pension from 60 up to 65, which is the age at which men were getting a pension at that time.
I know that the CEDAW tribunal was very interesting, wasn't it? It was a wonderful event, and a lot of things where people were able to say about the injustices that they'd actually experienced.
That's correct. Yes, we had a number of witnesses. We had expert witnesses and we had witnesses speaking from their own experience. We had Leanne Dallimore, who was one of the expert witnesses. She's a member of Unison, so she was speaking from the perspective of a unionist who's had a large number of members who've been impacted by this change. Michaela Hawkins, who's also Unison, and she spoke of her own experience and her knowledge through being a unionist. David Henke, who's a Westminster blogger, who was an expert witness. Pauline Hinder and Carol May, and Dr. Shirley Presler, who were all witnesses talking about their own experiences, and Dr. Elgin Safarov, who is the vice chair of the CEDAW committee in Geneva. That's the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, and he's the vice chair of the committee that oversees the implementation of CEDAW and that countries adhere to the principles of CEDAW through their practices and their laws because they've signed up and ratified CEDAW.
It was very interesting to hear the testimonies of all the people that was involved and the situations that it was very clear about the discrimination.
Absolutely. And one of the issues that came out that had not been identified before, but just as an example, is that women who went through divorces who were impacted by this change may well have suffered, and in my estimation, have indirect discrimination. They haven't suffered directly in regard to the marital status issue, but let me explain it this way. When this change came in, many women were unaware, because we can come to that point later, about the egregious inaction by the Department of Works and Pensions and the responsibility of every secretary for that department over the period, but they weren't alerted, and we'll come to that. But when they went through their divorces went through on the basis that their pensions would accrue to them, the state pension, when they turned 60. Now, that was incorrect because it wouldn't. But what it indicates is that judges of the family court were unaware, the family division, barristers who were representing these women, I don't know where they were when they acceded to the notion that the women would gain the pension at 60. And what appears clear is, from at least a couple of witnesses, was that when they went through their divorces, it appears that there was some knowledge on the other side about this change. So the divorce went through on the basis of getting a pension at 60 when the women didn't know, and it appears the court didn't know, and the barristers representing the women didn't know. But sometimes on the other side, there does appear to have been some knowledge, and that their divorce settlement, you see, went through. And this is crucial because it goes to their entitlements in terms of assets and income. So if we look at this, here was this rule, which was a rule that looked neutral on its face as regards marriage. It had nothing to do with divorce or separation, etc. So it looks neutral. But when you look at the impact on women who are going through divorces, it impacts differentially on them because it had an impact with regard to their settlements coming out of the divorce. And this has not been identified before at all in this. Of course, it's not the most crucial issue. It's crucial to them. But there are other issues in relation to direct discrimination on the grounds of sex and direct discrimination on the grounds of age.
Yeah, those are very important issues, aren't they? Age. and sex, the discrimination.
Absolutely. And you see, what astounds me about all this is, and I have to put it in these blunt terms, the High Court and the Court of Appeal in this country and the Supreme Court, will come to them in a moment, they have absolutely no idea about how discrimination law works. Because, first of all, there's an effort at conflating direct and indirect discrimination. Let me explain it this way. With direct discrimination, it's clear that it applied here. Now, what the court's trying to say is, oh, well, look, there's no direct discrimination because men were the ones being discriminated against because they'd been set at 65 since 1940. This change came in when the age remained at 65 for men but went to 60 for women. Now, the fact that men were getting it at 65 and women at 60, well, yes, you can say, well, yes, they weren't being treated fairly because they weren't getting it at 60. But it actually does not eliminate the fact that the women were being directly discriminated against, because what we have to look at is how the change operated. And what direct discrimination is this? That direct discrimination is unequal treatment. Let me explain it really in simple terms. Say I put up a notice saying no woman or no person who's BAME need apply for this job. Now, that's direct discrimination. It doesn't matter whether no woman applies, that no BAME applies, that no man applies, or no quote-unquote white man applies. Irrelevant. That statement, no woman or no BAME need apply, is direct discrimination. Because women and BAME people are being treated less favourably than men and non-BAME people. And in this case, let's look at age first. What happened here was that women who were born in the 1950s were directly targeted by this rule that came in, and it was therefore unequal treatment of women born in the 1950s. Why? Because they were being treated differently from women born in the 1940s, and that was made explicit by the minister or the secretary in his second reading speech on the 1995 Act. Also, women born after 1950 were not affected at all by this. So here we've got this target group, 1950, and men weren't impacted at all. And therefore, what we see is that a particular age group had to change their working expectations so that they would not retire at 60 as they thought, but they'd have to retire at some time later than 60. I'll come to that in a moment. And they also had to reorganize their retirement plans. Now, nobody in the 1940s born group of women or men, and nobody beyond 1950, had to change anything at all. They weren't impacted by this. So it's clearly direct discrimination on the grounds of age. And it was internal discrimination on the grounds of age for all the women involved, because some women were only affected getting it 1 month later. Some women were affected by getting it 2 years later. Some women were affected by getting it 6 years later. And some women continued to get it even though later on their birthday, and some got it after their birthday. So it's clear that within that cohort, there is direct discrimination on the grounds of age. Because if you were born on the, say it was the 6th of June, 1953, you wouldn't get it on your birthday. And you wouldn't get it at 60, your 60th birthday. You get it sometime different. Now, if you were born on, say, the 1st of June, 1952, you would get it on your birthday, but you'd get it later than 60. And if we can just come to the sex issue, sex and gender, because this is where the High Court and the Court of Appeal got it so very, very wrong on their view that because men had got it at 65, they were the ones being hard done by. The point is that no man had to rearrange his working life or his retirement plans, unless he was married to somebody who was affected, and that's association discrimination. But let's come to these women. Every single one of the women who were born in the 1950s had to reorganize her expectations about when she would get the pension. She had to reorganize her paid working life plans. Say she expected to retire at 60. Now she has to scrabble about to get a new job or to persuade her employer to keep her on. And every single one of them had to reorganize their plans about retirement. That is less favorable treatment. And it's less favorable of treatment vis-a-vis men. Anyway, it's direct discrimination, and there's absolutely no question about that. None.
The president's report. Am I right in thinking you took that to Downing Street?
We did take it to Downing Street, yes, the 2nd of November. We presented at number 10 Downing Street to the Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, requesting a meeting with him before the fiscal statement comes out later this month. And we've also contacted the Chancellor, requesting a meeting with him too, because it's crucial that this matter be resolved. You see, what's interesting about this, apart from anything else, is that the women born in the 1950s have explicitly donated to the revenue of this country out of their own pockets. And they're the only group that have done that. They were explicitly selected to forego their pension rights up until they were 65. And that meant that they were donating their pension monies to the general revenue. Nobody else has done that, not in this explicit and discriminatory and particular way.
The mini budget, or well, it wasn't a mini budget really, was it? But the last one, and obviously the fiscal statement now, are very great causes concern, especially for 1950s women.
Well, absolutely, Ian, this is correct, because you see, everybody's going to be impacted, except of course those in this country, in the United Kingdom, who are extremely well off and who we know have accounts offshore and don't pay the taxes that they should, or have non-domiciliary status, for example, which is, of course, a holdover from colonial times and this country being an empire. And people who seek to benefit from that should look very hard at their attitude towards this country and their attitudes, their greed in terms of actually hanging on to monies that should come to this country to support people in this country. You know, we've got children who are being fed in this country by Save the Children Fund, which was a fund that was set up for so-called developing countries or third world so-called countries. But to come back to this fiscal statement, yes, women of the 1950s, if I can put it in colloquial terms, a double whammy, because they've already suffered from granting to revenue, although it was non-voluntary on their part, the monies that they should have gained from the pension. And that meant that they were put into a category of really struggling because of this lack of the pension payout when they were planning to have it. And now, on top of that, there will be more so-called austerity measures. This government has the money. There's no question about that. They've got the power. They don't have to let the energy companies make whopping big profits. They could stop that from happening. And I have to say that the government of Victoria, one of the states in Australia, has said it is renationalising the energy company. It's not going to have electricity in the hands of private ownership anymore. And that's what we should be doing in this country, because everybody who are in ordinary circumstances is going to suffer. Those at the top, of course, don't care, because they're not going to be scrabbling to pay their energy bill. And the government really has a responsibility to everybody in that situation, and particularly to 1950s women. That's why we want a settlement, explicit statement of a proper settlement in this fiscal statement that's coming down later this month.
Well, Jocelyn, I hope that that happens. The 1950s women, my thoughts are with them, and I wish them well.
But thanks so much, Ian, because this is a really vital issue, and all the women who were born in the 1950s are rising up and are not satisfied with what the government's doing. And we've got 3.8 million women who were in that category. That 3.8 million votes, and governments and opposition parties have to be very well aware that those votes are going to go in the direction of a party, a government that makes a commitment to these 1950s women and stops the discrimination that they've suffered, because they've suffered enough and they ought not to suffer more.
Jocelyn, thank you very much, and it's been lovely to speak to you today, and I hope to speak to you very soon.
Thank you so much, Ian. Good to be with you.